Welcome to Roadcase, the podcast that explores the live music experience. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Josh Rosenberg, and I'll be taking you on a journey through in-depth interviews with performers and key people in the industry to explore the magic of live music, how it can be totally transformative for both fans and performers, and we'll look at how they take it all out on the road. It's going to be a great ride, so here we go. Okay, welcome back to Roadcase, everybody. This is your host, Josh Rosenberg. I am so psyched to be here this week for this special Pitchfork Music Festival preview episode with Nick Gohl and Shiraz Bhatti of the band Deeper. And I've also talked to Sarah Tudson of Illuminati Hotties. Pitchfork Music Festival takes place in Chicago in Union Park coming up this Friday, begins July 21st, extending through July 23rd. Neither of these bands have played Pitchfork before, and it's especially cool for Deeper to step on the Pitchfork stage because they call Chicago home. Really excited to have them on the show. There's a number of different ways that you can get involved with the Roadcase community. First and easiest way is to follow us on the socials. We are at Roadcase Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can also get in touch with us by shooting us an email with any questions, comments, concerns. We'd love to hear from you. We're at info@roadcasepod.com. And if you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can visit our website. We're at www.roadcasepod.com. Another great way to help support Roadcase is subscribe to Roadcase on your favorite listening platform. If you're on Spotify, that little box that says follow there at the Roadcase homepage. It's as easy as clicking that. Really helps out the show. And thanks to everyone that's already done that. On Apple Podcasts, there's a check mark up in the upper right-hand corner. You just click on that and you'll subscribe to Roadcase. Thanks so much for doing that. Another great way to help support Roadcase, super easy, is to rate and review this podcast on those favorite listening platforms that you're listening to now. If you're on Spotify, just under the follow box is a box with some stars. Just click on that. It's as easy as that. On Apple Podcasts, scroll up from the Roadcase homepage. You'll see a bunch of stars and a place to write a review. You know what to do. Hit a bunch of stars. And even if you're just going to write a couple words of review, so helps out the show. And thanks to everyone for doing that. So happy to have you all for this Pitchfork preview episode. And first up, we've got Deeper, Nick Gohl, and Shiraz Bhatti. They've been touring like crazy since shows came back in mid-2020. Their 2020 album, or mid-2021, and their 2020 album, Autopain, came at a particularly difficult time with tragedy in the band when their original guitarist, Mike Clausen, passed away. Furthermore, they weren't able to tour that album right away because of the pandemic shutdown, but they have come back to live performance in a really big way, and we'll talk about that. Their Pitchfork debut is something that they're really, really looking forward to. They've got a new album out entitled Careful. It's got an exclamation point as well. It's coming out September 8th. They just got signed to Sub Pop Records. They're super psyched about that. They call that a bucket list item, as well as playing for the first time on the Pitchfork stage in their hometown. Really psyched to have them on the show. This is a more of a brief episode, about 20, 25 minutes. Super psyched to have them here. And then I'll come back on and introduce Sarah Tudson of Illuminati Hotties. Thanks again to all of you for being here for this special preview episode for Pitchfork. And I want to send a special thank you to Nick Gohl and Shiraz Bhatti of Deeper for being here on this episode of Roadcase. And here we go. Hey, Shiraz, Nick, how you guys doing? Deeper. Are we going deeper today for Pitchfork, for this Pitchfork preview episode, man?
We're going
deep.
Let's
go.
Let's go deep. Let's go deep. Let's go deeper. Actually, now, Autopain has your 2020 album. On the cover is the Prentice Women's Hospital from here, from Chicago. We all live in Chicago, and that hospital, well, that site, that building was eventually torn down, and they built a new women's. Both of my kids that were born in Chicago, my two younger ones were born in that Prentice.
Oh, no way. That's awesome.
Yeah. I didn't actually recognize the building because it's a weird angle because it's not the whole, it looked like some alien, you know, weird thing where they bring down kids into the, it's like a weird mythic kind of.
That's how they do it, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. All the storks just like, you know. Well, this is an exciting time for you guys. You're playing at Pitchfork for the first time. You're kicking off things, I think, on Saturday on the main stage at 1 p.m. Being from Chicago, being an integral part of the DIY scene in Chicago, what's that like to be stepping on stage at the Pitchfork Music Fest? Nick, you were telling me about your experiences at going to the festival, and kind of tell me a little bit about what that means to you.
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying before, I've been going since I was in high school, and I'm 30 now. I'm 31 now, so it's been a number of years that I've been there. I don't know. It feels good just because, I found out about so many bands because of the website, and then like finding out that they had a festival when I was younger and being able to go to that and experience it, it like was really eye opening as like a young musician.
Yeah,
I remember my first Pitchfork. They had this thing called Sparks, which was like the precursor to Four Loko. Mm-hmm. And I just remember Mr. Mistering copious amounts of Sparks by the bar tent. and by the end of the festival, my mouth was like bleached orange from the Sparks energy alcoholic drink, and just like talking a 1,000 miles a minute, you know, 17 right. years old, looking like a freak. And I was like, I feel like I found my place, you know?
Yeah. Drinking energy drinks and listening to music. It does for as a teenager, it just doesn't get quite more wholesome than that. It wasn't
I was a bad kid though.
Oh, I can tell, really. You were really on the cutting edge there.
Yeah.
Shirazi, what's been your experience with it?
Man, I think I'm just really stoked. It feels like a bucket list moment for sure. Mm. Being from Chicago and just going, I moved to Chicago when I was 19.
Yeah.
And been going almost every year, but there's one year where I sprained my hip a couple weeks before and I was on crutches and just had like big hat on, sunglasses, and just chilling under the tree. And then all these kids, I don't know, for some reason thought I was like selling acid and stuff. And they coming up to me like,
what, hey, the hell was it, the crutches or what that gives it away?
Like,
I don't know. He's got the hat blurred out.
Yeah, you can't see. Don't look at that hat. That's my drug dealer hat.
Oh, that's it. Okay. All right. I thought it was like the bun, the hair up in the bun kind of thing. You know, I don't know. So Nick, since you were talking about your first time there, was the feel kind of like a Pitchfork feel? Like we talked about a little bit about Pitchfork reviews and the media side of Pitchfork and how they introduced you to bands when you were younger. Tell me a little bit about how kind of that feel sort of infiltrated into your mindset and what that felt like being at the festival at that time.
It was cool to like look at the lineup. And, you know, like maybe like one or two bands, but the best part about that festival is like, you never heard of half the bands. And so you went there and you're like, well, I read this and that about them, so I'm going to go and see this, you know, like, like seeing like Kurt Vile for the first time at Pitchfork and being like, oh, well, I saw this, like takeaway show that he did in France and it looked sick. So I'm going to go see him play the main stage, you know, like. That was very much like what the website was to me too, where I would go on it not knowing what I was looking for. And so that was like the funnest part about it. And a big part of that was like, they used to have like all these cool, like web series that they would do, like Juan's Basement or like Don't Look Down. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So like, I feel like the fest still kind of has like that excitement where you're going to go see bands that maybe you haven't heard of before.
Yeah.
But especially when I was younger and when it was like in its earlier days, the fest definitely felt like that. It felt like if you've ever experienced like a Chicago street fest, it felt like if it was like three blocks combined, you know, like three, like if it was West Fest, Due Division, and Wicker Park Fest. You had all those put together. That's how like the festival felt like to me.
Yeah,
it still kind of feels like.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. The food's good. It feels homey and it feels comfortable. It's not
overbearing like Lollapalooza can be, you know?
Right, right. You know, and it's interesting that you say, you know, a lot of people that I talk to about Pitchfork say, well, I haven't heard of any of the bands. I'm like, well, okay. I mean, except for headliners one a day or some one extra a day that someone's heard of. That's the plus of Pitchfork. And while a lot of people who go to Lolla or other larger festivals will only go if they know like six or seven artists they can focus on, a lot of people go to Pitchfork. I know I do. That's why I enjoy it, is because I don't really know the bands going in particularly.
Yeah,
but I've always left with another great favorite band that I've seen. And that's sort of part of the whole thing. And it's why people read the media as well. Yeah. And yeah.
I feel like that's like the interactive part about those kind of festivals, especially when it's like a blog or like a website that's putting it on. Like they have all these artists that maybe you haven't heard of, but they have literally like a website dedicated to researching those artists.
Yeah, yeah. There's a reason why they put them on the bill. It might not coincide with your own particular music tastes
or maybe it does and you just don't know, you know, like
that's kind of the flip side. That's cool.
In like being like part of like the like revolution of the internet and like musical interaction with the internet. Like, you know, people said that like it made it harder to find music. I think it made it easier. Like, I don't know, like I can
make it harder to find music.
There's so much of it that it's hard to like find what you like.
It becomes overwhelming, but it's also overwhelming can be good also if you know what you like.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if you're willing to do like some research.
If you have the open mind to listen to things that are new to you that you've never heard. And it depends on what your own mindset is. I love listening to music I've never heard of before.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. Yeah. Is your preparation for this, for playing a festival, different than you would do ordinarily? Like, I know this is, it looks like this is a festival that you guys are playing just like a one-off show, and then you guys are going more on tour and like a major tour in September and October in the U.S. And then in November, you're playing a bunch of Europe dates, which also include Pitchfork London. So you'd be well versed in the Pitchfork universe by the time you get to Europe. Is the preparation for this different than for a festival like this than it would be for kind of a tour run?
I'd say so a little bit. The trend lately, our guitarist Drew lives in New York, and he'll fly in a couple days later and earlier, and we'll practice a couple times. But this time he's flying in a week earlier so we can practice every day as if we were on tour to try and get tour tight.
Oh, good.
And then we're going to go to Thalia Hall and practice for a few hours a couple days before the festival and just try and get like a good monitor mix and exactly how it would be at Pitchfork. And we've never done that before, so I'm pretty stoked about that.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. Let me know what day that is, because I'm about 5 minutes away from Pilsen.
Like the main thing with like when we're like writing like a headlining like set list versus like a festival set list is you just gotta like, we're just trying to like keep people like excited the whole time, you know, and trying to bring people in, and also something that like people can tune in and out of, you know, like it's not like we're building a set where like everybody's coming to see us. So like, that's like definitely like a big focus of like how we interpret it for the crowd that's going to see us. Like we're not going to play an encore or anything like that. So like, if there's like a song that we usually play that people want to hear in an encore, we'll probably put it in the middle of the set or something like that.
Oh, okay. As opposed to like the beginning, is a kickoff song important for you guys at a festival where you want to get a lot of people's attention, like right off the bat?
We like to just do a ton of noise. So, you know, bring people in like a light to like flies or something.
Oh, like literally like just like make it really
usually,
noisy at
we'll
the beginning and just like,
usually,
what the fuck?
Yeah, and then we'll kick it off. We kind of have like our pocket in the beginning and our pocket at the end usually, and pretty much solidified. And then the middle is kind of what we change up every night.
Gotcha. Well, that's cool, Shiraz, that you were talking about how Drew's coming in early, and so you guys want to be tour tight and play a bunch. That was kind of interesting that the you know, the festival date is coming kind of not in the middle of a tour. I suppose, you know, that sort of preparation wouldn't necessarily be necessary if it were in the middle of a tour. Let's talk about this, your new album. You got a new album, Careful! Exclamation point, coming out on September 8th, 2023. Nick, you got the Sub Pop hat on. You guys are on Sub Pop label now. Tell me a little bit about where your mind's at, and congratulations on that. And I listened to the album in advance of the album. It's fantastic. It sounds amazing.
Thanks, man.
Sonically, it's really tight. I love how it's like a better, it's like a new improved version. Well, not necessarily improved, but it's kind of like a new, snappy, crisp, sonically challenging version of what you guys have been doing, and it sounded just really amazing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's super exciting to work with Sub Pop. Like, the team, it just kind of feels like we've been working with them for a long time. Like, it really clicked, I feel like, kind of out of the gate. The good part about the record too is, like, we hadn't signed to Sub Pop when we wrote it and recorded it, so I feel like it's just like naturally what we wanted to do. It wasn't like we were writing it for anything. So I'm happy the way it kind of feels like we've grown. Like, we put it on ourselves to like improve what we wanted to improve from like the last two records. And feels like we kind of got there with this one, but yeah, feels good.
Yeah. Shiraz.
Yeah. I'm really stoked about being on Sub Pop. That was just kind of dream label for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like Nick was saying, actually the record was basically sitting on the shelf for almost a year before we signed to Sub Pop. We didn't really know what to do with it. And like coming out of COVID, we're like still on the Autopain circuit and enjoying playing those songs live for the first time. So it just kind of felt like we're moving real slow and also not really sure what direction the band is going and not really sure what a deeper song is as well. And and then we're like, well, a deeper song is whatever we want it to be. And I think we showcase that in Careful.
Did they ask to listen to what you had during the process of signing you guys to the label, since you already had a lot of these songs already recorded?
Yeah, we gave them like our near final mixes of 75% of it, and they're really excited about it.
Wow, that must be that must be gratifying. Nick,
our longtime engineer and producer Dave Vitrano, he just hit us up. He's like, do you mind if I send it to my friend who works at Hardly Art? And we're like, sure, yeah, send it away. And that's who got us in touch with Sub Pop. And then it just kind of like, so we like had it just sitting there, and he was just like, guys, we need to do something with this. You need to stop like dragging your feet. So we finally just kind of like let it go a little bit. And that definitely felt good that somebody was into it when we let it go. Cause when you hold on to something so close for, it took us like probably 3 years to finish it. I don't know. Sometimes you lose sight of like, what's the finished final product, you know?
Totally.
And just being able to like give it up to somebody else feels really nice.
Yeah. Well, you guys have had some really difficult and tragic situations occur in your band, with your original member, Mike Clausen, who had mental health issues and eventually took his life. I'm really sorry about that. And then you were with Autopain, the touring of that, of course, was postponed because of COVID. Now you're in this beginning of this album cycle, ready to tour this new album. Tell me about where you are with this new opportunity to go out there. No one can erase the past and the pain of the past, but so I hesitate to say clean slate, but kind of like sort of a new direction or newer mindset perhaps going forward. Can you talk about that a little bit, Nick?
Yeah. Sorry, my dog's barking at me. You know, like, we've lived with like this whole, you know, lived with everything, all the pain and stuff that came from before. And
yeah,
honestly, like, putting out Auto Pain was super hard, and we had finished it prior to Mike passing away, but it felt weird when we put it out because it just like happened all kind of at the same time, and just kind of made it feel differently. Like all the things that we were singing about and writing about, like kind of just like started to happen. Like even with like, you know, Mike, like there's a lot of stuff about depression and stuff like that. And not only that, but like the dystopian world that we all ended up living in after it came out. So it just kind of felt like, it felt like that like everything that like was going on in our minds and the way we felt was starting to get like turned into reality a little bit. And so like, the good part about Careful for me was like, it was kind of like an escape from, a lot of that. Like the mindset for me was when the pandemic hit and we had to go into lockdown, that was like right around the same week that the album came out. So I wasn't ready to give it up. I wasn't ready to like stop working. And I felt like the best way for me to like get through the pandemic was to start just like trying to use the feelings that I've been happening to me ever since Mike passed away and the pandemic hit. So a lot of just that went into the songs in Careful. And it was really just more of like self-reflection and a release and trying to feel better kind of thing. So that's mainly what Careful's about. And
when did you start writing it?
Like the week we got back. So like
got
the week
back.
After which, the week after the pandemic, the lockdown. So like the week after.
Oh, so we're like right away. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think Airplane Air was the first one done, and that was the demo for that was recorded about the first week we were back in lockdown.
Wow. It's deep. It's deeper for sure. wow. I feel for you guys, and I'm so sorry that that occurred on so many different levels. And, you know, my heart goes out to you guys and to Mike's family. And I know that was a while back. Sorry to bring that up, but, you know, I think it feels like it's part of this new cycle that you guys are going through. And it's got to be great to be able to just release an album and also and just go out on and tour it. And
Well, let's hope there's not another global pandemic or anything like that, you know.
Yeah, I would kind of like hope that would not be a thing that's going to be happening, Nick. But thanks for bringing it up, dude.
Well, I got stuck in Europe last time. Well, in the UK, we went out there and
you guys had to cancel a couple of shows because a couple of you guys got COVID or something. Like, yeah, was that like the Omicron thing?
It was during Omicron. Yeah, and I got stuck. I was stuck in the UK, and then these guys, because like you couldn't like travel from the UK to Europe,
right?
And flying out of Paris, so I stayed in London, and then these guys went to Paris, and then Kevin and Shiraz got it, and they got stuck for 10 days too. So it was like,
stuck in London for 10 days. I feel sorry for you, but I'm just joking.
Well, it was winter time, you know.
Yeah, true. Like, great. You know, pick a city that's like a little less gray than Chicago, right? You guys are super popular in Europe, though. What do you attribute that to? Or you're touring there a lot, and you know what's up with that?
I have no idea. I think the first time we were in London, these two guys came up to me like, "Oh, we're such huge fans. Can you please sign your self-titled?" And that was the first time I realized, like, "Oh man, this is like
people are listening.
It's
to this.
More than like our friends and friends of friends listening to this. This is awesome. I gotta call my mom and let her know."
Mom, someone asked me for an autograph. That's amazing. I love the. You know, you can't read a review of Deeper without someone making a reference to yet another band that they recall listening to your music.
They love to fucking do that.
What the fuck is that? Is that annoying?
Sometimes, but also it's like, I don't know. I feel like we write music that is, if you can write something that somebody hears it and they're like, "You're not ripping off this, but it sounds like familiar to me." Like, I feel like that's like a good way to write music sometimes.
I feel like people need to categorize what their likes and dislikes are. Everyone does that, right? Oh, this kind of sounds like this. This kind of sounds like that, because people tend to stay in one particular lane, which is neither good nor bad. I mean, I do hear a lot of Gang of Four, so I just wanted to see if you guys would get pissed off if I said that. But anyway.
No, we like Gang of Four. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest underrated albums of all time is Gang of Four Entertainment. Maybe it's not that even underrated. I just think people should be talking about it on the daily.
if there are good bands like that they're relating to us, then I feel like, hell yeah, do it again. Tell us more, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So where are we? So you guys are going out in September, October in the United States, and then you'll be in London in November. What are you guys up to this summer?
Just a lot of hanging out.
Yeah. Just going to blow it out of Pitchfork, and then you're just going to have to rest up for a couple months after that.
Yeah.
Got to keep the people wanting more, you know?
There you go. How do you guys usually prep for tours? Are you guys like, you've toured quite extensively since the pandemic. I mean, I think you were out like right away. We talked about the Omicron tour being in, we'll call it the Omicron tour, fall of 2021. You guys have been out the spring 2022 tour with Spirit of Beehive. That was a big one. You guys like being out on the road. What are some specific challenges that you face? Shiraz, you want to take that one first, since Nick's always chomping at the bit. We'll let you jump in there.
I think just staying mentally, physically, and spiritually healthy through tour, it's something that took us a couple of years to figure out. Like, when we're in your early 20s and read about rock stars on the road, you try and do that, but then you realize it's not good for your body. I think we do a good job of taking care of ourselves and staying like just stretching and being good on the road.
Yeah, just making the excess only about exercise sometimes is a good thing.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, you were selling acid at the first Pitchfork. Oh, no, you weren't. People thought you were.
Right.
All right, I was kidding. Nick, what about you, man? What do you do to like stay sane when you're on the road for so many dates?
Just smoke a lot of weed, you know, and
always
do the
opposite plan. Always a good plan.
I don't know. Yeah, like one trick I have is I try not to like know what day it is, and then like not. And I try not to focus on like what part of the tour I'm in, because like, it can get like kind of daunting when you're at the beginning or like right in the middle.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I think it's a good way to like, just kind of like live in the moment and then like, you know, just try to block out like the normalcies of life and just kind of like go straight into it. And just,
well, were
it.
You able to do that early on? I mean, now you've got a tour manager, I'm sure. So,
No, we manage ourselves.
How do you stay in the moment when you're managing yourselves? Like, who's, are you not the one? You're stoned the whole time, so he's not doing anything. Shira, you want to tell me? No, I mean, like, if you're, how can you just stay on the daily in the moment and not look forward? Or how do you look forward but still stay in the moment? Because someone's got to look after logistics and someone's got to be worrying about all that kind of stuff.
I think just getting in rhythm, just a new rhythm of life, and I look forward to that. Like, I feel like I'm home, and then I'm on tour, and the tour stuff. look at her. But yeah, when we're on the road, we're just, you know, playing and sleeping and getting on the road, and it's a good rhythm to have.
Yeah. Nick, how about you? Well, you're dealing with the dog. I got my dog here, too. You can see
nice.
Him sleeping on the ground right there.
I got a little, her name's Sweet Pea. She's a little, see if I can pick her up.
And the hardest thing to do is like leave the dog at home when you're on tour. Oh, look at her. She's really cute. Sweet. Looks like a beagle.
Yeah, like she's
a like beagle with a big ass pit bull head.
Yeah. She's got a bite too. I'm married, so my wife takes care of the dogs.
Yeah, no, but still, like, clearly you're going to get the dog taken care of, but, like, being away from the dog is a bummer, too. It's like when you're away from your kids or something. It's almost even worse. I always thought it was kind of like, this sounds horrible. I thought it's kind of worse when I leave my dog. When my kids were old enough to talk, you can pick them up, you know, you can say hi to them on the phone. You can't do that with your dog, you know?
No, you can't do that.
All you get is pictures. All you get is pictures. You've tried to? Yeah, they really... Yeah.
My partner, Natalie, she's like, we try to do it on like FaceTime to see if they would like recognize me, and they do not know, like, they can't like even when you put the speakerphone up to them, they don't know who it is. I don't know.
There's something about how they process visual images and what they're seeing. You can't show them themselves in the mirror. They can't see Facebook and Zoom and all that stuff. You could think they do, but they just don't.
They don't. And
the other day, my dog ran up to a woman on the street. It was about the same, like late 20s, same age as my oldest daughter. And he was 100% convinced it was one of my kids. And I'm like, no, it's just like, no, they're seeing shapes. And like, she kind of recalled a little bit the shape of my daughter, like height wise and everything. It's just weird. Anyway, here we are talking about dogs.
Hey, we're the deep dogs.
So. Yeah, we're the deep right. dogs.
Yo.
We're on brand.
Yeah, yeah. Well, really excited for you guys. Set. I'm so glad I got to learn a little bit more about both of you. You guys are really cool and great. I love this new album coming out on September 8th. Careful with an exclamation point. And love the videos too. Those guys, that was the one with the mind control thing. That was really cool. That was, and it had a good ending too. I liked it.
It really Shrav's our hero.
Yeah, I know. Someone's going to show them what's in that bag and it's going to be all over. I knew that was coming.
Oh, we always got the bag. So don't worry about that.
What, the bag is like a constant in videos for you guys? Is that a thing?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. You got to look back at some of the videos.
Oh, listen to him being cagey. Oh. All right, guys. Good luck for that set. I'm really looking forward to that. And you guys are on stage, Pitchfork, on the Saturday at 1 p.m. on the green stage. Don't miss it. Come early and have a great time, everybody. And you guys, good luck to both of you.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for being
man.
Here.
Good meeting you.
Good to meet you guys. Cheers.
Take it easy.
Okay, that was me talking to Nick Goal and Shiraz Body of Deeper. Great conversation. Love those guys. They just had a really great way about them. We really had a fun few minutes chatting with them for this preview episode. So psyched for their debut performance at Pitchfork, as are they. Shiraz called it a bucket list item. Again, they've got a new album coming out on September 8th entitled Careful with an exclamation point. It's coming out on Sub Pop Records that they just got signed with. That's another bucket list item for these guys that are really on an amazing roll. So happy that they were on the show. You know, funny, Nick talked about having been to the festival when he was younger and talked about how it was very eye-opening to see so many bands that he frankly had never heard of. And that's kind of a theme for Pitchfork, at least for me. I always, like I said during the interview, I always come back with a new favorite band that I didn't know I liked and hadn't heard of in particular. But I just absolutely love this festival so much, as do these guys. It was interesting to talk to them about their preparation for this festival, in that it kind of comes right at the beginning. It's sort of a one-off show for these guys. So Shiraz talked about wanting to be tour ready. One of their members of the band that comes from New York is coming into town even a week earlier, so they'd kind of be tour ready, rehearsing every day, and they're going to set up at Thalia Hall, which is a venue close by, get their monitor mixed down, make sure everything is super dialed. So this is going to be an amazing set. It's taking place on the green stage at 1 p.m. on Saturday at Pitchfork. I'm so psyched for these guys. Can't wait for that set on Saturday. So hope to see you all there for that one. Coming up now, I've got Sarah Tudson of Illuminati Hotties. Sarah is a noted producer as well as songwriter and performer with Illuminati Hotties. She attended Berklee School of Music for production, engineering, and songwriting. Her production credits include working with bands such as Hand Habits, Speedy Ortiz, Goon, Dolly Valentine, Pom Pom Squad. She's done work with Bright Light, Social Hour, Porches, The Kills, Black Lips, and even Hamilton the Musical. She's worked on the latest Boy Genius album as well, as and even going out this summer with Boy Genius to perform at such amazing venues such as Red Rocks and The Gorge and Kettle House Amphitheater out west, among others. She's also never played Pitchfork before, so she's really excited about that. She's going to be coming into town early, she said, to check out some sets on Friday or Saturday. So look for her out there in the crowd. Illuminati Hotties plays on the blue stage, my favorite stage, on Sunday at 5:15 p.m. So look for me. I will be at that show. Illuminati Hotties has a new single coming out this Friday on July 19th. So heads up for that. If you're a fan of Sarah's, it will come as no surprise that she is just a really cool human. And what does Sarah not do? She's a producer. She's a songwriter. It's just kind of like finding that balance between the two nowadays. And what is it that she doesn't do? We'll talk about that. So glad to have her on the show. So thanks to Sarah for that. And here's part two of our special Pitchfork Music Festival preview episode. And here we go. Hey, Sarah, great to have you on Roadcase. How are you?
Good. How's it going?
Yeah, it's
good to meet you.
Yeah, same here. Same here. It's so nice to have you on the show. I was telling you how much I loved the video where you're just scarfing food at a diner, which is like everyone's dream, just to do it so messy. And like, and wait, okay, so now I'm putting you on the spot. The song was the Would You Be Canceled? Would You Be Canceled? What is the name of the song?
The full title is Will I Get Canceled If I... Oh, God. I might have to lose that. We just call it canceled okay, in the set. Like, that's all it says on the set list.
Let's just call it canceled. You know? That's all you need to know. It's like this thing, and then it's parenthetically, would you be canceled if you were a man? Anyway, we understand the concept.
Yes, exactly.
I've loved you since I saw that. I thought it was completely bonkers. It was so cool. And I'm so glad to have you here for this Pitchfork preview episode. So we're going to talk about Pitchfork a little bit, and we're going to talk about live performance, which I think is an interesting subject for someone that's so involved in production and engineering. And several of the interviews that I've done are with performers that also produce. I think what really comes to mind, because I was thinking about it yesterday, was just with a Chicago-based band, or formerly Chicago-based, Dead. Jason Bala is the bassist.
Oh, yeah.
He produces their stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah. And you went to school for production. You were at Berkeley. And I love
it. Was, yes.
Yeah. Did you know Susan Rogers is a professor there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's one of my favorite teachers ever of all time.
Oh, my God. I just saw her speak about her book, This Is What It Sounds Like, about her experiences with Prince at South By in March. She was spectacular.
She's a really special person.
Yeah. What'd you find amazing about her stuff?
I think that she, you know, her whole life story is quite wild, even aside from the, you know, the fact that she worked with Prince for basically a decade, who's like, you know, what more iconic musician could you be working with? But,
right.
She's just so, emotionally and spiritually in touch with music, and has such a great, and then, you know, also has this like scientific encyclopedic knowledge to back it up. And,
right. And she's like a professor of physiology, like audio physiology or whatever that is. Right.
The music cognition. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The mechanics.
Exactly.
The physical mechanics of listening to music and why everyone is different.
Yes. So she, taking a production class with her is just like, there's no way that I've ever learned about music in a more fulfilling way, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And her, and to just like pick her out of a lineup, like she was in the studio with Prince, and I'm like, to look at her, you would not be like, okay, this is a cool person. She belongs in the studio with the Prince. It was that very kind of almost outsiderness initially that was attractive to Prince to have her in the studio.
And as
a woman, she's certainly, she said Prince liked to work with a lot of women as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was very much about hiring women in his band and on the technical side, and has had sort of a long history of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're gearing up for summer festival season. I'll be at Pitchfork doing live interviews. You'll be there as well. You know, what has Illuminati Hotties, what is their historic experience with live performance, with you coming from a production standpoint and engineering, which is really a true love of yours? And you've produced albums with so many different artists: Hand Habits, Sadie Dupuy, Speedy Ortiz, Goon, Dolly Valentine, Pom Pom Squad. I can go on, even Hamilton the musical as well, because you were an assistant with Chris Cody, who's also produced a ton of different artists in LA. We've even talked about the fact that I'm also an LA native as well. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, by the way.
Me too.
Oh, you did where?
Yeah, in Woodland Hills.
Oh, I grew up in Sherman Oaks. I went. Did you go to Taft High School?
No, I went to Calabasas High School, but I live quite. My parents' house was quite close to El Camino High School.
Oh, El Camino. Yeah, I remember playing football there as in high school. They had a good football team. I went to Grant High School, which you may have heard of, I guess.
Okay, right?
Is that a known? Yeah, near Van Nuys High School, I guess. So getting off the topic, production, living in L.A., Illuminati Hotties, tell me about live performance, because to move them from the studio project of yours, and your studio and engineering work is absolutely amazing, and maybe just to say it's a studio project is kind of, we can modify that nomenclature, but what's the relationship with live performance?
It just sort of all became as the band and the record started to have legs of its own. It became something that I felt we needed to do to maintain our sort of career path as a band.
Yeah.
And we toured very hard from 2018 till the pandemic, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really lucky that it started to become essentially half my income. It was a huge piece of the puzzle as far as being on the road about half the year and then being in the studio with myself and with other bands for about half the year. So once touring opened back up again, we kind of just got back to it, and it's definitely looks different now, but it still has been a huge piece of the puzzle of just being able to play the record out, sell the record, meet fans in person.
Yeah. So you've been able to do both, essentially. You guys toured pretty hard initially.
Yeah. Yeah. When the first record came out, we were hitting it very hard, and I was gone for most of 2019, on the road for most of 2019. Yeah. And then, and in between, just making records. So I feel really lucky and happy that I can kind of balance the two things without too much stress.
Have
so
you been
far.
Able to balance
sometimes?
What is that balance it like? Gets... it's just like I keep thinking about how great your live shows are and how powerful your music is and how impactful it can be in a live setting. And then, you're working, you're really cracking it open in a studio and doing your thing, which is amazingly and clearly evident. I really love your latest Let Me Do One More is just astounding. So many incredible, sonic surprises and so many interesting things in it. What is that balance like for you? Because you were sort of giggling when you were talking about the balance a little bit. Like, that's a thing for you, I'm sure.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just, the further along I get in my production career, sort of, the more deadlines are imposed by outside forces, it's not just show up at the studio and hit record for a day. It's becomes much longer form, and especially on records that I'm mixing as well, that can go on for I could block out 2 weeks to mix a record, but it could take a band a month to get to the, sorry, my dogs are barking at a truck.
That's okay. I bark at trucks sometimes myself.
It could take, longer for the band to sort of come to consensus about what they want in a mix and send me notes. And so things get extended beyond deadlines, and then tour crashes into that. And it's I got to finish this by the time I leave. So whether or not it's done, it's done,
Is there some kind of comfort in knowing that when you're touring, it is semi-finite, that, okay, we're going out, we're going to play several cities. They're not going to ask us back right then. Like, it's not like you get extended deadlines, right? You're in, you're out, you play. I mean, to really crack it down and to a simplified form, it sounds like production is something that can kind of drag out a little bit. Like you said, you know, facing deadlines and facing the needs of others that can constantly change and extend things and make things more complicated. It sounds like touring is almost more manageable in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, touring is, it's definitely like the schedule is the same. The, you know, essentially day to day, we're expected to have produce the same results.
Yeah.
You know, there's a map laid out where we have to be and when we have to be there. And there's a lot more like automated process. You know, I think there's a lot of room for like sort of crazy shit to be happening, which happens in the studio too. But,
right. But it seems like you have a time when you're going on stage, even that crazy shit's going to happen. You're going on at six.
Yeah, exactly. So it's more autopilot, I guess, yeah. As far as like get in the van, go to the venue, sound check, play the show, go to the, you know, wherever we're staying.
Is there a comfort in that schedule when contrasted with the studio work for others?
Definitely. Yeah. I think there's, it feels like a little bit of a relief to be like, okay, like all I need to do is like make sure everybody is healthy and safe and that we play the show and like that people show up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What was it like early on when, in 2017, I guess Illuminati Hotties began more or less. What was it like initially going out? Is it different than it was kind of more recently, like post-pandemic or prior? How is that? What does that evolution look like for you in terms of being on stage in a live setting and kind of the touring logistics that we were talking about?
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of like when we did a handful of sort of like DIY, like headliners in smaller venues. But a lot of our touring came from like being support on a bigger bill. And I guess how it's really changed is it's sort of interesting to see like who the Hotties audience is now that we're going and doing our own shows,
right.
That people are showing up for support. If we're supporting a bigger artist, like who shows up early and like, have they heard of us before? And
yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to see like who the real Hotties fans are as far as like an audience identity, which was maybe like harder to kind of figure out when we had, you know, less legs.
Oh, but not when you were like headlining smaller shows, you know, those people were there for you. But there is an interesting dynamic when you are opening for supporting a larger act, seeing, yeah, who shows up. Like, what are some of the insights that you gather from that? There must be so much going on in your head sometimes when you're looking out and seeing what's going on out there and who's paying attention or not or what or what's happening.
Totally. I mean, I think like so far we've been lucky enough to tour with bands that attract like a really supportive audience and that we've managed to sort of gain fans along the way who happened to be there for our set and really liked it, or we got to talk to them after the show or whatever. And it's all been it's been really interesting to just sort of like, I guess, sort of convert people to being fans, like if they hadn't heard of us before.
Yeah.
And I feel like our support shows have been sort of all over the map. So it's really cool, like to kind of be tailoring our set to what we think maybe a fan base would appreciate or just like going extra hard on like being ourselves and seeing who latches onto it.
Totally. I guess festivals must be interesting because it's not really you're supporting an act. I mean, there is a lineup, right? But the people at the stage can choose to be there for you. I mean, sometimes people are sitting on a stage for the next act, but let's look at the positive side. They're all there for you. Do you sense like, especially maybe at a Pitchfork, have you played Pitchfork before?
This is our first time playing Pitchfork.
This is a cool, this is a really cool festival, and you're on a really nice intimate stage under a tree canopy on the side of this park. It's really cool. Yeah, I love this.
I love that.
The blue stage, if I'm not wrong. So anyway,
I actually don't know offhand, I'm excited. I love Chicago, and I've only heard good things about the fest, so it'll be really fun. There's a lot of bands I want to see, so hopefully I'll catch some.
Oh, totally. Who are you looking forward to seeing?
Definitely Big Thief. I think I'm flying in the day before, so I'd love to catch them.
Yeah, right on. Because you did some work with Buck Meek on a single, right? The initials, Buck something on the beach with the lyrics.
Yeah, exactly. Buck is speaking on UVVP. I think it's just a good collection of, they got some really good bands coming through, and it's going to be fun, and there's going to be,
I go in like not knowing every band, obviously. I don't think many people do, but I always go away with a new favorite and something that's really striking. Last year, Kate LeBond kind of blew me away.
Oh,
and
yeah. Kate LeBond's awesome.
And Lowe played before Mimi passed away.
Obviously. Huge.
Yeah, shortly before. And I had Alan Sparhawk on the show, but their set, he absolutely stunning, blew me away. It was on the blue stage. Both of those shows were on the blue stage. That's where it happens for me, is the blue stage. I think people have that's kind of like, it's that stage that can just really produce some amazing performances for some reason. I don't know exactly. I think it's that intimate feel. Like, you'll see, it's really cool over there. You've said that you enjoy the art of making live music as much as making it in the studio. Do you ever struggle? Your studio work has so many beautiful intricacies and just a lushness of its sound combined with the punk and rock force of the band when you really get going. Do you find that balance is really striking in a studio? Are you able to achieve that live, or do you just say, fuck it, we're going to be a rock band?
It's definitely a little bit of both. I think with like sort of modern use of technology, we can feather in some of those moments in tracks that our drummers, playing along with.
Oh, so you'll have some pre-recorded snippets and or whatever you want to call it, and he'll trigger those.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. There's a bit of just saying like, whatever, we're just going to do it the best way we can with like the tools and instruments that we're able to bring with us on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also sort of an element to me, at least, that's sort of like the difference between like cinema and stage for a play, is that you have the opportunity to suspend disbelief and like play with what people perceive reality as, whereas like in a play it's like we have access to like whatever's happening in real time,
right?
And when you're capturing a recording and going back and doing overdubs and being able to manipulate sound with all of the studio tools that we have time to dial in when we're in the studio.
Yeah.
It's just sort of a different thing, and both feed me creatively. But live, it's like, there's no capturing, it's just, we're just moving with the time continuum.
It's happening in the moment.
In front of people's faces.
Yeah. Is that even more challenging for you when maybe in the back of your mind you're going, oh, geez, if this were in the studio, I could go redo this or something? Is it more of challenging for you, or is it like continually frustrating? I mean, you had said that your favorite part of touring is your favorite part of engineering, that every day is completely different.
Yes. So, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It's true. And I think, if I got caught up in the perfectionism of what making records is to me, like if I started to feel like that about the live show, I don't think I would have as much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily I think in a performance, people are forgiving of like a little bit of perfection in exchange for like humanness and,
Well, that's the beauty of live performance, that anything can happen, that it's an organic process. And that's what really brings the audience in. Is there something that in particular, when you're going into a festival such as Pitchfork, is there certain things that you have to bear in mind in terms of your own preparation for a set that's kind of sandwiched on a stage in between other artists, a little different. You're not touring like you're touring with, or doing some support. I don't know if it's, well, touring with Boy Genius this summer. Is the fest hopping into a festival like that? Is there a different preparation for you?
A bit. Yeah. I think, you know, my goal, I guess, on a festival stage is to be able to stand out to a large group of people that is not a captive audience. You know, in playing shows with Boy Genius or with whoever we could be supporting, like once people are in the door, they're there, you know, whereas like a festival allows for a lot more floating around. And, you know, some people are sort of just walking and finding what catches their ear.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we definitely want to make a set that is sort of the shut up and play the hits version.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck are you eating your corn on the cob over there for? You should be at this stage. Let's go. Kind of that kind of fun.
Yeah.
Like, come on down.
Yeah.
So it's more of a straight up rock. It's kind of like straight up hard hitting kind of LA punk, your sort of roots, if you will.
Yeah. It's a bit of that. And it's just like, basically, I just want to like keep the momentum of the festival going. And I feel like my job is just to show up and like do something that the people have not seen yet on the stage. And some of that is just, leaning into like more rock stuff. And some of it is just finding a way to like get even the slower songs to be like engaging to like a large outdoor crowd of people.
Right. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that set. Talk about your relationship with Boy Genius, and you're supporting them this summer, and God, they gave you the worst venues. I mean, you know, you're doing Red Rocks and the Gorge and Kettle House in Montana, and then Idaho Botanical Garden, which I haven't heard of, but sounds fucking awesome. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I've known Lucy for ages. And then over the years have become friends with Julian and Phoebe as well. But basically like when they were made the record in Los Angeles, and as they were making it, they, sort of got like underwater with the sheer amount of stuff they had to get done. And Lucy called me and was sort of like, hey, like, are you in LA? Like, can you come to the studio over the next couple of weeks? And I was like, luckily it was right at the beginning of 2022 or maybe it was like it was just after the holidays at some point. So I feel like I was kind of flexible and I was like, yeah, sure, I'll come by. And then it just turned into like doing a significant amount of production and engineering on the record. And I was so lucky and happy to be a part of it and be working alongside them and, you know, got to know that crew a bit more. I mean, again, like I went in to Boy Genius as an engineer and a producer and with no expectation of how that would affect, you know, the band and the production career, aside from me making my own records, are pretty separate. And like, I don't feel like one feeds the other than that I can have both of those skills. So when they reached out to have me open, again, so just honored and excited, and we'll be playing bigger shows than we've ever played. So
expand on that a little bit. Like there's two kind of parts of that for you, that when you're doing production, you kind of didn't expect them to sort of have you perform as well. Huh? Why was that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that they know, like, they are obviously aware of my career as an artist, but, you know, they hired me as an engineer and as a producer and as an extra ear and file manager and whatever, you know, editor, whatever needed to happen on the album.
Right.
But, you know, I think that's what I walked into the session to do. And I was pleasantly surprised that they ended up asking me to play any shows with them as well. But
right.
You know, when you're in a band sort of that scope, like the reach of support acts is wild. Like
is what you're saying is they could ask anybody. Why did they ask me? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I think they're just, literally. Yeah. Honestly. Yeah.
Wow.
And I feel really stoked to like have those people in my life and
yeah.
be friends with them. And, you know, they care about lifting other musicians up. And
it's
so
great. It's great. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Playing at Red Rocks. Have you played there before?
I've not played there. I've walked around there during the day. I'm so excited. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. 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 Oh, it's so amazing. Yeah. I go every year to see it. Well, I go whenever My Morning Jacket plays, and I think I've just gone for Avett Brothers awesome. A couple times, and I just love that. It's just so amazing when it doesn't destructively hail. I've been hailed on there, but not like golf balls. It was breaking people's toes yeah. and fingers.
My goodness. Yeah.
That's not going to happen this year.
I don't think so.
Well, I'm really psyched to see you at Pitchfork, and thanks for sharing some of your insights into live performance and the Illuminati Hot is just amazing stuff. I can't wait to see it perform live. And for those that are out there, go watch some of the videos. There's a bunch of, you have a ton of live performance on YouTube, and your production stuff is just so the work that you do is just so amazing on others' albums and on your own as well. And can't wait to have you on the show another time for a longer chat, Sarah. But thanks for
being
here.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, and right have a great time in Chicago. What's the kind of favorite thing you want to do in Chicago? You got something in mind?
Ooh, I guess I gotta eat a hot dog, right? Pizza?
Yeah,
like
I don't know.
Food?
Well, I guess there's good. There's a whole bunch of food carts at Pitchfork and such. And
amazing.
Yeah, I've never eaten a bad meal at Pitchfork, so it's nice. And there's a nice little flea market also with all sorts of musical related items and clothing. And there's hopefully this year they're doing the Flatstock as well, which is a gig poster exhibit, which I really love. So mm-hmm. there's all kinds of different things to do. I'm sure you'll have plenty of free time.
Yeah, I'm stoked.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
Good luck. Cheers. Okay, that was me talking to Sarah Tudson about her upcoming performance at Pitchfork as part of this special Pitchfork Music Festival preview episode. So happy to have talked to Sarah. Like I said at the top, what is it that she hasn't done? Like, what is it that she's not doing is kind of like a shorter list. She's a noted producer, produced so many different albums for so many different bands at this point, and really out there with Illuminati Hotties as well, songwriting and performing with them. They hit it on the hard, really hard on the road in 2018 and 2019. Of course, everything slowed down and stopped during the pandemic, but here we are now, and Sarah's producing in so many different ways. And really for her, it's like we talked about, really finding that balance between touring and producing, doing what she does on the road and doing what she does in the studio, really spending now kind of half the year producing in the studio and half the year kind of out on the road and songwriting or creation with her project Illuminati Hotties. To talk to her about how she achieves that balance. And it was really interesting to learn more about that and what she talks about, saying when she talks about her favorite part of touring is really her favorite part of producing is creating the music. And of course, it's in two different settings. One is out there for fans putting music out there, and another is that producing in a controlled environment for others, getting mixes correct, listening to input. It's really kind of a different type of dynamic. And to hear her talk about it was really, really compelling. And kind of to be out there for her, and sort of there's another angle of Illuminati Hotties trying to find out who that real Hotties audience is when she's opening for a particular band or when they're headlining, and what that's all about for her was really interesting as well. And, you know, I talked to her a little bit about how to replicate or to come close to replicating that intricate sound that is an Illuminati Hotties record on vinyl, and what that looks like from a live performance perspective. And it's really kind of an organic process, and it's what I love about live music so much. She talked about how people are willing to suspend belief. It's that sort of real-time live performance versus recording and sound manipulation. But, you know, I'm willing just to, you know, I love live performance. I'm willing to get out there and listen to a band perform live in exchange for missing some of those
tiny intricacies that might occur for the energy and for the vibrancy and excitement of a live performance. And that's sort of what we're really looking for. That's why I go, because I love that excitement and I love that immediacy. And Sarah also talked about how people are willing to exchange perfection for humanness. And that's what it's all about. We want to see bands up there performing live. We want to see what that's really like to create that music in the moment. And that's what's really beautiful about it. So I was really excited to talk to Sarah about that as part of this preview episode. You know, she had never been, she's never performed at Pitchfork. So she's really excited about that. Again, she's on the blue stage on Sunday at 5:15 p.m. And later on this, during this summer, she's going out with Boy Genius, who she also participated in the production of the Boy Genius most recent album. And she was surprised they asked her to go out on tour. Don't know why. She's awesome. And she was working with them. And clearly she's been friends with Lucy Dacus for a while, but she's going out in August with Boy Genius. She'll be at Red Rocks, at the Gorge, at Kettle House Amphitheater, and the Idaho Botanical Gardens out west. Just some amazing venues. I'm really excited for Illuminati Hotties and for Sarah for that. Thanks again to everyone for being here for this special Pitchfork preview episode. Again, Pitchfork takes place here in Chicago at Union Park in Chicago this upcoming weekend, beginning on Friday, July 21st, extending through Sunday, July 23rd. It's one of my favorite festivals. I'm so psyched for it, and I look forward to seeing you all at this festival. I want to, again, thank Nick Goll and Shiraz Body of Deeper for being here. And I want to send a special thank you to Sarah Tudson of Illuminati Hotties. And I want to thank all of you for being here and for your continued support of Roadcase. I will see you out at Pitchfork, and heads up for some great new episodes coming up as well. So long, and I will see you soon on Roadcase. Thanks again so much for listening, and I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved with Roadcase. You can do so in a number of different ways. You can email me at info@roadcasepod.com with questions, comments, and even suggestions for guests. Or you can follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at Roadcase Pod, and we have a YouTube channel called Roadcase Podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite listening platform. And if you could please rate and review the podcast while you're there, that would be great. So I want to thank Waltzer for this awesome theme music that we have. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to Roadcase. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, so I'll see you on down the road.